homeowners and realize their dreams.
I grew up in a place people call the slum, South Central Los Angeles. My mother and father were key in my life. I found, as a young man, financial success very early in my life. And I made some decisions based on my ego and not based on good business sense. And I went from living in a beach house in Malibu to living in my Jeep. So I was homeless for 6 months of my life. And over time, I began to rebuild. I created my own company. The first year, I did zero in business. The fourth year, we did $24 million in business. Once again, I believe I had the world all figured out. But I wasn't fulfilled. There was something missing. In 1992, we had the riots in Los Angeles. The largest riot in U.S. history. $1 billion in property damage. More than 8,000 people arrested. 50 people lost their lives. The riots caused me to want to do something, to make a contribution, to give back to my own community. So I decided to start this program that would bring capital back into the inner city. And so we created Operation Hope out of necessity.
Operation Hope is an organization that helps 115 banks and major corporations lend money and provide services to those in the inner city that need it the most.
We give loans for home ownership. We give loans for small business ownership. We are focused primarily on low to moderate income individuals and low to moderate income communities.
You're here because you want to fulfill your dream. We're on the same page? Black, white, red, brown, yellow, we all have the same desire. A hand up, not a hand out. Fulfill your dream.
When you walk in the operational banking center, there's a sign on the wall, and it says no loan denials. That immediately restores a person's hope and sense of self-esteem and their sense of self-worth. We created 400 homeowners in South Central, East LA, and Watts.
If you commit to take your life back, I will meet you halfway.
I was expecting twins. I couldn't even afford to rent an apartment at that time on the salary that I was making. So if I couldn't even rent an apartment, how was I going to come up with enough money for a down payment on the house? Someone told me about Operation Hope, and December 31st, 99, closed on my property.
Once you own a home and you've got equity, you're going to take that equity and send your kids to college. You've got options in your life.
I have a four-unit building that I own and live in. As a result of my owning the income property, I was able to successfully go on and actually start my own business. I'm now a State Farm insurance agent. I have a foundation now that I can create for my children.
One of the most inspiring things we do is a program called Banking on the Future. We taught 69,000 kids that program in 300 schools.
How much in the savings account?
10%.
Then you pay your
bills.
And then you take care of your
children.
And we teach kids the basics of a checking account, the basics of a savings account.
Before I came here, I didn't know about banking, I didn't know about saving. But now I save, I have over $300.
The feeling that I get when I go to bed at night, the peacefulness can't be purchased.
Self-esteem.
The internal joy that I have every day, it's priceless. I'm honored to do this work. I'm honored to be of service. And truly the gift is to the earth.
Please welcome John Bryant, founder of Operation Hope. John!
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome John Bryant of Operation Hope, our guest speaker of this evening.
Isn't God good? I'm going to try that one more time. I know my voice will carry, but I trust and have faith the mic will work. Isn't God good? Before I start, I want to recognize a couple dear friends. We have Michael and Athena Thompson, who actually, I have not yet had the pleasure of meeting, but my sweetie, the love of my life, who could not be here tonight, Sheila Kennedy Bryant, they are here as her guests, and my sweetie tells me they just had a baby girl 3 weeks ago. Are they here? The Thompson family. In the back of the room, thank you so much for being here. And please tell my sweetie I introduced you so I can go home. I just love this one. Selena had to go perform because she's a singer. Brandon, a young golfer, is in the back of the room. Glynis is a CEO of her own company, which should be a member of the chamber if she isn't already. Can the three of you please stand as I introduce the head of household, some of you would know as the legendary, amazing jazz legend, Gerald Albright. Gerald, please stand up. Glynis, Selena, Brandon. They now live in your great city. I know half of you are thinking that you're going to have them for your, Gerald, for your next performance, be all over him like a cheap suit, because he's very susceptible to compassionate requests. We're not human beings having a spiritual experience. We're spiritual beings having a human experience. The great author Deepak Chopra has said this, and my spiritual father, Reverend Dr. Cecil Chip Murray, said, "It's not what people call you, it's what you answer to that's important." And never, ever, ever answer out of your name. And then I added, "To argue with a fool proves there are two." What's my point? We don't do business with governments or companies. We do business with people. And I had the opportunity to hang around four of my heroes this week. But three of them literally changed my life and are responsible for me being here today. I had a chance to hang around our first black president, President Bill Clinton. Some of his staff, we were at the Clinton Global Initiative in New York, and some of the staff came by and said, "John, the staff been talking about you, man." And, you know, we had a vote, and we said, you know, he's like the black Bill Clinton. Then they said, no, we had to change that, because Bill Clinton is the black Bill Clinton. The brother raised $7 billion in the last 3 days for poverty and health. And I mean, what one person can do is amazing. And as honored as I was to be with him, and if I lose my voice during the course of this presentation, it's because Mr. Clinton don't go to sleep, and I got about 4 hours of sleep a night, so please excuse me. But my other hero, or heroes, really I saw all today. You see, we were in New Jersey, I think it was Morristown, and my mentor and hero, Andrew Young, who really was a co-founder in the civil rights movement, literally, and was Dr. King's most trusted aide, and helped to form and create the civil rights legislation that we all benefit from today. I mean, literally helped to write the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. And you know his story, I hope, from there. Young people in the audience, if you don't know it, you need to know it. Go home and Google his name. He became a congressman, 2 terms, a mayor, 2 terms, the co-chair of the Olympic Games, the UN ambassador for the United States of America, the only black man to ever do such a thing, to the first black man to create a private sector Olympic Games and created billions of dollars for the city of Atlanta. And now he's a legend and a hero for Africa. So really, civil rights has been his calling and will be the touchstone for his legacy. And then you've got social justice. I'm with President Kagame of Rwanda. We see Ambassador Young and I went to go to Morristown, New Jersey to speak at a Rwandan investment conference. And we were in Rwanda about 2 months ago. And most of you would only know Rwanda by the bad news. But you know you cannot have a rainbow without a storm first. It's a scientific fact that you cannot have a rainbow without a storm first. And Kagame will win a Nobel Peace Prize one of these days because he took that country back. He went in on July 4th, 1994, and he stopped the genocide. And he told Hutu and Tutsi, we are one family, and we will be Rwandese. And he created a constitution that's probably the most progressive in the world, where 49% of the seats in government are held by women in Africa today, where private enterprise and every child to 10th grade gets free education. You see, we get spoiled in this country because we assume that education is free. No. If you're in a developed country, you pay to go to school. But in Rwanda, it's free education to the 10th grade. And this man is just creating a model for the entire African country. And I think if you can go from genocide in Rwanda and apartheid in South Africa in 14 years to peace and prosperity today, think about this now. They went from somebody with a lizard skin boot on their neck to brothers wearing lizard skin boots on their feet. All right. In 14 years. If they can do that, then we can do this. 14 years. And so to me, Kagame is social justice. Social justice. You cannot, I think peace is the part of peace is prosperity. Then my third hero that I had a chance to be with today is a civil rights leader. And his name is Mayor Wellington Webb. And in many ways, Andrew Young and Wellington Webb are cut from the same cloth. They both created out of whole cloth and grew incredible airports. I mean, you come into Denver, and it's nothing but flat land every place, and then you see these white tents sticking out. I thought I was going into Dubai or someplace, Saudi Arabia, you know, and I was looking for the mosque when I got here, and my man had this vision. I mean, he's crazy. And then you look, it's like you drop a pebble in the ocean and then there's this ripple effect. And then you leave the airport and you see hangars and businesses and retail everywhere. Wasn't nothing out there before they put that airport. And now you've got, forget the billions of dollars that's created at the airport, you've got at least $1 billion in spinoff activity about 10 miles outside the airport. And it doesn't matter whether you're white, black, red, brown, or yellow, that airport's producing green. Ladies and gentlemen, that was created, grown, nurtured, brought into existence by a black man. That man, we can all give him a round of applause. Now, there's another side to Wellington Webb. It's the cheap side. Now, Mayor Webb called me one day. He said, John, do you believe in America? Mayor, this is your dime, so we can take as long as you want. But sure. Well, John, do you believe in America's Constitution? Mr. Mayor, can we get to the point at some point? Well, John, do you believe in your constitutional rights? Mr. Mayor, like you, I'm black. My family fought hard for their constitutional rights. Well, John, if you believe in your constitutional rights, do you believe in your rights to free speech? Mr. Mayor, will you please get to the point? Well, John, if you believe in your constitutional rights for free speech, will you come give one? Here I am. My man is cheap. Rub that nickel's hard, the buffalo scream. Straight up capitalist. From civil rights to silver rights. I think it's important to take life seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously. I think it's wonderful that we can have good times, we can be serious, but we can laugh at ourselves. And we can be honest with ourselves. Well, I'm none of the things that you heard about on that tape, and I'm none of the great things that even Mayor Webb told you about me. I'm a little black boy from Compton, California, in South Central Los Angeles. At my best moments, I'm just simply transparent to God's will. And at my worst moments, I'm insecure, selfish, self-righteous, prideful, and vain. I am proud to be able to say both of those things. You see, a saint is a sinner that got up. I don't know if you just heard that. I don't know. A saint is a sinner that got up. None of us are perfect. None of us are perfect. And I think that your real strength comes from and through your vulnerability. It comes through your ability to be transparent to God's will, to have it not be about you. I think the difference between an Andrew Young and somebody else is that somebody else was a politician and an Andrew Young was a public servant. He said it wasn't about me, it's about we. Well, I grew up in a household in Compton, California that was about we. My mom and my dad never finished high school in the South, never finished eighth grade, but two of the smartest people I ever met in my life. My mother told me she loved me every day of my life. You know how powerful it is to have a child be told by his or her mother that he is loved? So I never really had a self-esteem problem to speak of, because I was told by my mother that I was somebody. So I was rich in spirit. So when I say today, there's a difference between being broke and being poor. Being broke's an economic condition. But being poor is a disabling frame of mind and a depressed condition of our spirit. And we must vow never, ever, ever to be poor again. Why is that important? Because then you can say, it's okay if you don't like me. I like me. That's an important statement to be able to make. Because if I don't like me, I can't like you. If I don't feel good about me, I'm not gonna feel good about you. If I don't respect me, I'm not gonna respect you. And here's a big one. If I don't have a purpose in my life, I'm gonna make your life a living hell. And my father, my mother's name is Juanita Smith. Tell you what kind of person she is. She went back to school at 62 years of age and got her high school equivalency. My mama's not conceited, she's convinced. My mama put on her, you know, her cap and gown and across the stage. Now my mother's gone to college at 71. Don't tell me what God can't do. And my father, Johnny Will Smith, he's 81 years of age. He's owned a business of 53 years, a cement contracting business. And he made a payroll out the front door of our home, business owner just like you. And so when I started my first business at age 10, the neighborhood candy house, people asked me, how could I do that? My response was, it never dawned on me that I couldn't, because I saw my father do it. Now, why am I passionate about financial literacy today? Because my father, who has owned a business for 53 years, and who I am here because of him, I now take care of my father. He stays in a home that I built for him. I didn't do that because I wanted to do it. I did it because I had to do it. You see, my father made the money but couldn't keep the money. In 1970, we owned our own home. We owned a nursery. We owned a grocery store. We owned a gas station. We owned a four-unit building. And we made it, but we couldn't keep it. My father, the mortgage company, would come over to my house, and my dad wouldn't ask the interest rate, he'd ask the payment. There's never a time it's appropriate to ask what the payment is. It's always what the interest rate is. If you don't know, my father's not dumb and he's not stupid. It's what he didn't know that he didn't know that was killing him. There's an old Southern saying, no matter how much I love you, my son or my daughter, if I don't have wisdom, I can only give you my own ignorance. And so out of love, we pass down bad habits from generation to generation. There's not a welfare mother in this country in her right mind that does not want her child to grow up to be successful, intelligent, hardworking, and taxpaying, if for no other reason than to feel proud of them. But you can't give what you don't have in a blind town, a one-eyed man's king. If you don't know better, you cannot do better. So I'm passionate about this issue of financial. See, this is personal to me. And so I had this business, the neighbor candy house, and I bummed 40 bucks off my mother and went to Iris Food Store and bought candy and came home and ate through half the inventory, and I and I hate candy to this day. Wilma's wondering why I didn't eat my dessert. The magic about this was I had enough money after I ate through the candy to go and buy. I sold the rest and went to go buy some more inventory. That told me somebody's making a lot of money off of our community. Now, the liquor store owner sold candy, but you had a detour to his place. Mine was on the way to school. He had a college degree, but I had cavities. I knew what we should be buying. So off of a $40 investment from my mother, and by the way, she didn't do it because she believed in me. She did it because I worried her to death and she wanted to shut me up. Off a $40 investment from my mother, I made $300 a week. Then I found girls and lost a business. Been a recurring theme in my life. But thank you, Sheila Kennedy Bryant. So, save me from myself. So now let's fast forward. I get involved in the entertainment industry. And I wasn't a very good actor, but I was good at playing myself. And luckily, that's all they asked me to do. And I made about $14,000 a week. I'm not going to tell you the lousy shows I was on. Y'all might go Google it or something. And I only tell you this point to make a point. And the point is that I began to get to a point where I thought I was better than other people. And God has a funny way of sending messages. Whatever goes around, comes around. The universe has a perfect accounting system. And so I wasn't very nice to people, which was, by the way, an insecurity. Because when you got the power, you don't need to use it. The nicest people in the world are my friends Bill Clinton, Quincy Jones, Andrew Young, Oprah Winfrey. When you got that kind of money and power, you can afford to be gracious. If you're a jerk, you are insecure. Well, that was me. And I went from living in a beach house in Malibu, California, to living in my Jeep. I was homeless for 6 months of my life. Now, I didn't tell my mother and my father that I was homeless, because I knew if I told them, they would have forced me to come home and live with them, and my mother would have got me a job at what was then McDonnell Douglas Aircraft, which was bought by Boeing Aircraft. And I would be making $18 an hour today. My mother didn't want to worry about me, and I knew that, but you know, my mistake was not my mother's problem. My mother didn't do that to me. The white man didn't do that to me. The system didn't do that to me. My uncle didn't do that to me. My environment didn't do that to me. I did that to me. God gave me the gift and the opportunity to make $14,000 a week, and I flushed it down the toilet. So I got exactly what I deserved. But God don't make dirt. You can't fall from the floor. Y'all are real slow tonight. Coffee's on the table. The speech is free. Y'all better learn to laugh or something up in here. On cue, I'll help you out. Man, Webb, you didn't know what you was asking for, did you? So I had to redefine success in my life. I decided that success was going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm. Don't act like y'all don't know what that means. That an entrepreneur works 18 hours a day to keep from getting a job. Don't tell me like y'all don't know what I'm talking about. Y'all are working before you got here. Some of y'all on your Blackberries right now. And on your way home, you'll be cutting the deal trying to pay for dinner. Because Wellington Webb will have you on the stage next year. He cheap, he wanted to write another check. So I decided to reclaim my life. And I had a newfound humility to go along with it. And God then blessed me. And I was crazy enough to believe that I could do anything, like my mother told me. So I went to a private banking firm, and they had no employees that looked like me. And to make a long story short, they were doing hard money loans. I didn't know what an equity loan meant. But after a while, I saw these loans that were 20 points and 20% interest. I mean, it was like a perfect eyesight loan. You got the loan and you went blind. It was 20 points and 20% interest. And I figured out, these folks were not racist. They were capitalists. I mean, they didn't know me. They didn't care whether people were, what color they were. They just wanted to get paid. But it was not just capitalism. And so I decided to, I wanted to be a partner in this company. And I remember they laughed at me. And so I worked the first year for free. And I took the California real estate test three times, and I failed it three times. And anybody in here knows the California real estate test is very hard to fail it three times. So they hired me, and so now with this great legacy of failing the test three times, I told them, look, I don't want to be your employee. You can have your money back, your benefits back. I want to be an owner in this company. I want a new division, no assets. Lend me the company's name, and I'll give you half the assets. I'll give you half of the profits of this company, and I'll work for free. They said, how can we turn that deal down? Sure, the answer is yes, stupid. And the next year, I passed a stupid little test. I made $9 million in business. The next year I did $15 million in business. The next year I did $24 million in business. And then I had enough gall when they came to me that somebody wanted to buy the company. I said, I'm not an employee, I'm a partner. And they said, what do you want to do, buy the company yourself? I said, well, if you can't beat them, buy them. So I did a management buyout and created my own company in 1991. I was 25 years young. I had a GED degree out of high school. Chris Rock calls it a good enough diploma. Now, I do believe that education is the ultimate poverty eradication tool. And today, your college degree is your new high school degree. So be clear about it. I got lucky. But I think everybody in here, if you black, you born on probation. You need to go get yourself to school quick and stay there. But I don't know where I'm going, but just follow me. It's a free speech. So in 1991, I thought I had the world all figured out. I had money, I was doing things. Well, you want to make God laugh, tell him your plan. You see, I used to blame poverty on the poor because I thought I was just like them and they were just like me. And I'd say, go get a job. Why aren't you working? What? Stop all that whining, stop all that complaining. And a Jewish friend of mine who worked for me came up to me and said, John, not everybody's a John Brian, and I'm not giving you a compliment. He said, not only was your mother and father a rare black experience, that was a rare American experience in a family, and you should not blame poverty on the poor. It's not a child's fault if his mother's on crack. It's not a child's fault if his father's missing in action. It's not a child's fault if his mother's working three jobs and dad's not around. That's not the child's fault. It's the child's responsibility to take their life and go from there. But don't blame poverty on the poor. But I was doing well and wiped it away. That's what we do when we're doing well. And then the riots happened in the Rodney King verdict happened. And now this is important now because I thought that this is America. I mean, you got videotapes showing Rodney King getting beat by a police officer sworn to protect. So Rodney King was no model citizen, but put him in jail next to the officers. But those officers had to go to jail. And I didn't think it mattered whether the jury was white in Simi Valley or black in South Central. But then I realized with the verdict that sometimes you don't have justice, you have just us. It's sometime to rationalize to tell rational lies. And that history is sometimes his story. And the victors write the history books. Now, I had a choice to make when the riots happened in L.A. I could have gone out and joined all that craziness and been part of the problem and hurt people who didn't hurt me. That would have been wrong. But I had these legitimate frustrations, and so I decided you could evolve or devolve, become impressed or depressed, go backward or go forward. And I decided that emotion, that passion was emotion made intelligent and properly focused. And you could not have a rainbow without a storm first. The lady who founded Mothers Against Drunk Driving was an angry woman who was angry at God before she lost her daughter to a drunk driver. And then she railed at God. How could you do this to me? Well, she didn't do that to you. A drunk driver with free will did that to your daughter. But after a while, she finally threw her hands up and said, I surrender. Okay. Tell me how there could be anything positive that could possibly come out of this tragedy. Help me understand. I think God said, thanks for asking. He took that anger and that emotion. He made it intelligent. She founded Mothers Against Drunk Driving and saved the lives of millions of our children. Did her daughter die in vain? Or was her daughter an angel through which other people are now traveling and are now saved? So the riots happened, and I founded Operation Hope, America's first nonprofit social investment bank. People said nonprofit social investment bank. That's an oxymoron, and John, you're a moron. They said it'll never work. I was 26 years young. I wasn't part of the political establishment. Nobody believed in me. You know, that's a wonderful thing when nobody pays you any attention. I had a $61,000 budget, one employee, and a vision to change the world and to eradicate poverty. And everybody laughed at me. Everybody laughed at me. But if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plan. I loaned the organization $200,000 of my own money because nobody would believe in it but me. Today, Operation Hope is in 25 U.S. cities. We have raised $325 million. We have 300 banks, insurance companies with $6 trillion in assets between them that are our partners. We've educated 190,000 children in checking, savings, credit, investment, and the history of banking because our kids are not dumb and they're not stupid. It's what they don't know that they don't know that's killing them. And it's a sin in the wealthiest country in the world that no one's teaching our children life 101 skills and financial literacy in the largest capitalist country in the world. It is a sin. And we have funded $150 million in home ownership, creating 750 homeowners and 300 small business owners. And in 14 years, not one home loan has ever gone bad. Don't tell me what you cannot do when God wills it. And then we are crazy enough to say you can bank on our communities. And people said these communities are not bankable. We have college degrees. We're bankers. I thought back to my days of the candy store. So we were crazy enough to create a banking center run by a nonprofit in South Central LA. In 2002, became the first nonprofit in history to build a bank branch and sell it to a bank. $1.8 million. Today we have 9 banking centers around this country. We're building one in Harlem with E-Trade, J.P. Morgan Chase, GE, and President Clinton. It opens in November. I invite you to the opening. We're in 25 U.S. cities. We have 3,500 volunteer bankers that go in these classrooms every day in 700 schools to teach financial literacy. We have 100 government partners on a bipartisan basis because you cannot eradicate poverty on partisan lines. Right. Let me say this one real quickly here. Let me just put this right out there. People say, well, he must be a Republican. This drives me crazy. I host Bill Clinton, nobody says a word. Then the next week I bring President George Bush into South Central LA on the 10th anniversary of the riots. Why he's hanging around President Bush? Because he's the president. Did I miss something? I mean, this ain't complicated. I mean, there's not like six of them. It's not like multiple choice. I mean, what are you gonna just do, wait till he leaves? I don't get this. Black folks are the only race of people that only talks to one party. I didn't say love the man, I said talk to the man. If somebody asked, called and said, will you have dinner with George Bush? I'd say, I'm deeply honored. What for? But I'm deeply honored. But if somebody called me and said, have dinner with President Clinton, I'd say, I'm deeply honored. What time? There's a difference in my response, but I'm still going to dinner. But there's a person in the House of Congress who called, well, you know, you're trying to turn everybody into a Republican. I said, I'd turn you into an orange if it would mean that we solve the problems in my community. Then she said, this is a Democratic community. I said, that's the problem. You see, you may vote the same way you always voted, but when you become a political free agent, you make everybody fight for your vote. So here's my response. My community's in a crisis. We lead every negative indicator you can imagine. Poverty, illiteracy, obesity, I'm tired of it. So I don't really care whether you're black or white, rich or poor, conservative or liberal, Republican or Democrat. If you want to help me eradicate poverty in my community, you are my friend. And I know I'm upsetting somebody. I don't care. It's a free speech. And why is free enterprise and capitalism somehow owned by the Republican Party? I don't understand this. So ladies and gentlemen, it's not about the Republican Party. It's not about the Democratic Party. It's about the Get It Done Party. Yeah. And we need to be in the business of getting it done. I'm tired of what we've been doing. We keep talking about I have a dream. Well, you know, I'm hanging around a guy who knows about a little something about the speech. Andrew Young, he was with Martin Luther King Jr. And he said, you know, he and my pastor said, you know, the best way to start living your dream is start by waking up. What we've been doing for 40 years, I say this with great respect, has not worked. I'm not saying I got the answer. I'm just saying we need to try something else. I didn't say something, I said something else. For the last 40 years, we've become experts at what we are against. We can tell you tooth and nail what we don't like. I'm sure there's somebody saying what they don't like I'm wearing right now. We can tell you what we're against, but the next 40 years, we gotta figure out what we are for. And when we do that, then we have a goal and an objective. And we gotta hold our leaders accountable. There's a lot of love in the word no. I love you, but you need to go get a job. I love you, but if you're gonna do the crime, you dang well gonna do the time. I love you, but if you're gonna have these children, you have got to take care of them. Am I getting too sensitive here? I love you, but you cannot pimp my community. I love you, but if you're going to call yourself a community leader, you have got to produce some community results. So civil rights to civil rights means civil rights is about race of the issues of race and the color line. But civil rights will be about issues of class and poverty. Class and poverty. Class and poverty. And if civil rights was waged in the streets, civil rights would be waged in the suites. From the boardroom to the classroom. And it's going to be education-based. If you don't know better, you can't do better. And that's why it's unacceptable that half of our kids are dropping out of high school. It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. That is an economic death sentence. It's unacceptable. That's like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. Now, you know, by the way, there wasn't a black band on the Titanic. Ain't no black band gonna be playing when the ship going down. They run over you trying to get off the boat. Now, about right now, my white friends in the audience think they got a pass on this whole deal. Y'all don't get a pass. No. Because let me do a little test here. Middle class 40 years ago was one parent working. It was back-based work, not brain-based work, blue collar. You had another parent stay at home as a domestic engineer, raise your children. That was funny. What's middle class today? Two parents working. It's brain-based work, not back, and you are not making any more money. Let me get even more personal. You living in Denver and you're making less than $40,000 a year, you are struggling just to make ends meet. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Now, I didn't say struggling in black. I didn't say struggling in Hispanic. By the way, let's stop having drama with our Hispanic brothers. Somebody once told me, you can take no pleasure from the fact that there's a hole in my end of our boat. I'm gonna sit down in a minute. And by the way, what do you think Puerto Rican is? If not too black to be Spanish and too Spanish to be black. There were slaves in Mexico before there were ever slaves in the United States. The second president of Mexico in 1555 was mulatto of African descent. My friends in LA talking about, look at all these Hispanics around here. What do you think Los Angeles means? They just coming to get their stuff. Now, the largest condiment seller for years has been ketchup. For years, it's salsa. Today. Message, you better learn to put some salsa on your barbecue. I'm down with my Hispanic brothers. I believe when you're getting run out of town, get in front of the crowd and make it like a parade. I'm speaking me some Espanol. Where is I going? So now we talked about if you're living in New York or California and making less than $50,000 a year, you're struggling to make ends meet. 80% of this country, by the way, is living from paycheck to paycheck. And 80% of this economy is on the back of you and me buying coffee, paying your light bill, paying your car note. That's what's keeping this economy going. So if we get stuck, this economy gets stuck. Now let me go one step further. The number one cause of divorce in America is money. More people filed for bankruptcy in 2002 than graduated from college. And up until recently, the largest group of bankruptcy filers were young people, were age 18 to 24. Now, I ain't too happy about this, but those are not black kids. Those are primarily white, middle-class college students getting a master's degree in psychology, an undergraduate degree in bankruptcy, paying for their pizza with a credit card, believe a check is a form of credit, and are calling home to you for more money. So this is all of our issues. And now let me go to the issue of diversity. Stop talking to people about diversity as a goody-two-shoes issue. It is not a goody-two-shoes issue. It's an economic issue. America is the largest capitalist country in the world today. It is also the only nation in the world where every race of people is within our borders. So you say, okay, John, that was easy. Yeah, that was lucky. Okay. The two largest economies in the United States of America, California and New York. The two most ethnically diverse places in the United States of America, California and New York. Now, I know what some of you are saying. There was an earthquake. The world tilted to one side. All the nuts rolled to California. But it is still the fifth largest economy in the entire world. And the 10th largest economy in the entire world is Los Angeles County. 176 different ethnic groups. The largest population of Koreans outside of Korea, 500,000. More Chinese Americans in Southern California than any place else in this country. So there's no mistake that the gateway to the Pacific Rim is the West Coast.
Talk now.
You don't do business with companies or governments, you do business with
people.
It's about relationships. Mm-hmm. Yes. You can trade with the Koreans. If you are Korean, you understand the culture. Mm-hmm. Better go eat you some kimchi. Better say gamsay hamnida. If you Japanese, better understand some, you know, konnichiwa. You'll get the contract because they shock you black and you speak some Spanish. I mean, some Japanese. The point is that diversity has always been a business trend. Let me go one more point to history. Then I know I'm boring you. I'm going to bring you forward and we're going to stop before y'all take the hook. The Civil War. Oh, that was about freeing the slaves. No, it wasn't. Ain't nobody died trying to save me. Now, am I suggesting people didn't have goodwill? No, I'm not suggesting that. But I'm suggesting that it was about it then what it's about today. Money, power, and position in the world.
Thank you.
So let me make it plain. The South, every economy goes through four models. The agricultural age, the industrial age, the technology age, and the information age. Where was America then? The South was in the agricultural age with free labor. Okay, you didn't get that. The North was diversifying with an industrial economy. And the European immigrants would come through the equivalent of Ellis Island, look north and see diversity, look black and see blacks catching heck, look north and see diversity again, look back south and say, I'm not black, but why test my luck, and headed north. And the Civil War was about the South resisting Northern economic domination, period. And the North won. Because the diversity model always works. Don't put a black in your management team or on your board because it looks good. Do it because it is good. Good for your bottom line. My last point, and I'm done. Black America is the only race of people in the entire world that created a political power base before we created an economic one. Bottom line, that's our problem. That is our problem, period. We are not owners. Middle class blacks have a $7,700 net worth. Middle class whites have an $88,000 net worth. They aren't smarter. They made different choices. Stocks, bonds, home ownership, and investment. That's why I cursed my cousin out talking about going to buy some stereo. So we gotta make better choices in our lives today to change our lives today. And people say, well, you know, look at what's going on in Harlem right now. That's racism. It's not racism, that's capitalism. And 10 years ago, we could have bought those properties. But where there is no vision, the people perish. So we gave it away. We didn't pay any attention to it. Now they're buying $1 million townhomes on 125th Street. And if we keep going the way we're going, Harlem's going to be two black people owning a sign that said, black folks once lived here. So I'm talking about a new movement. It's not going to be sexy. It won't be people voting and running up and down the streets. It's going to be boardrooms and conference rooms and teleconferences and MOUs. It's going to be you being civil rights soldiers. It's going to be you going into the classrooms of our kids and teaching them financial literacy and being role models to them. A kid thinks a drug dealer is a financial planner because he never met a financial planner. This is something that everybody can do. I'm not asking you to do anything crazy. I'm saying once a month, go in the local neighborhood, go into a classroom and spend an hour. That's all I'm telling you to do. Can we do that? But I'm not going to ask you to do anything that I'm not willing to do. We can't just be PhDs. We got to be PhDs too. So I stand here today and say, because of Bank of the West and U.S. Bank, and thanks to my friend Mayor Webb, who will serve as co-chair, we're going to launch Banking on Our Future Denver. We're going to recruit 300 volunteer bankers from Denver. We're going to go into our classrooms in your community, my community, and our community, and teach our children financial literacy. Will you stand with me? Will you stand with me? Come on up here, Mayor Webb. Now, I'm done. But let me leave you with this final thought. There are three types of people like three types of birds. There are eagles, there are buzzards, and there are turkeys. Now, eagles don't fly in packs. You've never seen a flock of eagles. Eagles are high-altitude birds. There's a dignity and regalness about an eagle. An eagle even raises their children differently. An eagle's nest is made of sharp little twigs. Message: you get big enough, well, you're pushing up against the inside of that nest, you better get up and go get a job. Talking about you living with your mama, you 45 years old. And then you got buzzards. Buzzards are low-altitude birds. Buzzards love packs. Buzzards are always player-hating, never player-congratulating. Always got something negative to say about somebody. And then you got the worst kind of bird. The worst kind of bird is a turkey. Because a turkey's got wings and can't even fly. All they're doing is profiling.